Jensen, and I'm just speaking about some of my experiences in World War II. I was out in California working at Benicia Arsenal when my buddy and I were drafted. And the first time we were turned down because of various disorders. And the second time we were both drafted and we came back home. I was registered in Fargo, he was registered in Fergus, so I transferred to Fergus and was drafted from there. We both went to Fort Snelling, came home together, and went on the same train together leaving Fort Snelling when we got back. But his half went to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and my half went to Camp Robinson, Arkansas. And I never saw him again after the war was over. So anyway, I took my basic training in Camp Robinson, Arkansas, branch immaterial, which simply means that they don't know where to put you, they send you there and give you a basic infantry training. I had a little carpenter experience, so I guess that's why they sent me to the special service engineers. And I wound up in Company 333rd Engineers. Well, we were at Marion, Ohio when I joined the outfit, and about the only thing I can remember, we were working at a quartermaster depot, mostly putting in railroad crossings. But my company got called to Columbus, Ohio to put in a hard stand for the Air Force. And I signed up as a truck driver. And if we used Air Force trucks, Oshkosh 7.5-ton trucks, great big real nice trucks. And we were hauling cinders for this hard stand. And the truck had a 2-yard box on them. And we filled it with cinders. I don't think it was 500 pounds on them. But that's the way we did it. We used those trucks. And later on, I noticed on my way back to camp, back to Marion, I was saw a listing, and I was listed as a truck driver, light and good. And I'd never driven even a Jeep at that time. So much for going to the Army list stuff. Anyway, from Marion, Ohio, we went to Yuma, Arizona in December of 42. And we were around there about 8-9 months. I was in Yuma for 6 months. Then we went on desert maneuvers. And I was between Banning and Beaumont, California for a couple months. And I asked for a leave to go home. No, I didn't want to go home. I wanted to go to Washington, where my folks were. And my girlfriend was going to meet us, and we were going to get married at my folks' place. Well, I asked for a leave about 2 weeks ahead of time. And my commanding officer says, "That's fine." He says, "I'll fix it right up." And I went to town and called my girlfriend and told her, well, I'll meet her out at Everett, Washington. And I got back to camp and my furlough was laying on the desk, but it wasn't signed yet. And I went out and looked at the board and all furloughs were canceled. So then from there we went to Camp Claiborne, Louisiana, where the output was activated. And there we had a refitting, of course. Well, and then when we got done with some more training and the refitting, we got 10 days leave, and that's when I went home. And I got married on the 7th of November, 1943. And we were together for 2.5 days. And after that, I didn't see my wife for 2 years and 3 months. And I was overseas 2 years and 2 months of that. So I went out of New York, and I can't remember the name of the ship, but anyway, we were in convoy, and it took us 11 days to get to Liverpool. And from Liverpool, of course, we took a train and went down to Ludgers Hall and No, that was the first. We were in Lunges Hall for a day or two. And then we went to Crawley Court, which is about 5 miles out of Winchester, England. And the gardener told us that Crawley Court was where the Germans took their bombing, aiming point for bombing of Southampton. He said he'd seen a lot of Germans go over, and he'd seen the Spitfires take on a lot of them, and they lost all the Spitfires, but he said there wasn't any Germans left either when it got done. So, anyway, there I did carpenter work, and I was at Lunges Hall, and I was at, I can't even remember the name of the town.
I can't spit it out right now.
But anyway, that's where I lost my finger. I was sawing with a powered steel saw, and I slipped on the ice, and I got my hand in where it's not supposed to be, and I lost a finger. And didn't bother me much, but they kept me in the hospital quite a while. And then from there we went to Wales. We were in Wales for about 2 or 3 months. And then we went to, from there we went to France. Went to Cherbourg. And we went into Cherbourg the day it fell. My company went in the day after it fell, I'll take that back. 1st Battalion went in the day it fell. Anyway, I was on the mine squad for about 6 months, picking up mines around Cherbourg. And whenever we worked on the mine squad, then we worked down on the docks. And we rebuilt the port of Cherbourg. It used to be the biggest passenger port in the world before airplanes. Now the ferries don't even run in there. And anyway, so I worked on the docks some, doing carpenter work. And while I was there, I got taken over to a pile driver. And the first day I fired the pile driver, never fired an engine like that before in my life, when nobody else had either. There was 5 of us. And we were, another guy operated the first day, and the next day we traded positions. And about the 4th or 5th day, the guy in charge of the whole works, who had operated a donkey engine a little bit in the oil fields, he got sick, so I took over, and I was on that floating pile driver for about 3 weeks and doing everything. And also a little bit after that, lieutenant called me in and says, gonna send you up to the quarry to do some demolition. I says, I'm not a demolition man. Well, he says, you're on the mine squad, aren't you? So, okay, I can blow up dynamite as well as anybody else. And I was up to the quarry just keeping the crusher going, making the stuff up enough so we can get it over to the crusher and in the crusher while they were getting ready for a big blast up on top. And I was up there for 3-4 weeks working with one Frenchman. And after that, my company went to a little town of Brick, Quebec. We were there for, a month. And then we went to Le Havre for about 3 weeks, building up the cigarette camps. And then we went to Germany to build railroad bridges in support of Patton's Third Army. And we built a lot of, just an I-beam under each rail. They were temporary bridges. But I always thought it was 83 bridges in 79 days, but I guess it was a fewer than that. It was about 79 bridges in 77 days. But anyway, we built a lot of bridges, and I was in charge of 2 bridges, but mostly I was on a train. We picked up a yard engine, and we'd have to haul the material down. We'd find the material in some German factory, and then we'd have to lay out a route. We had a German speeder that we used to find the stuff and lay out a route, and then we'd go out with our own speeder and a few pieces of rail and some blocks, and block it up to run enough to run a train over. And then we'd haul wherever we found the material, the I-beams, we'd haul them down to the bridge. Well, after that, we were there, and we were in Mary, Germany when the war ended. And we had two bridges left to finish, and we finished those, and we went up to Starnberg Lake for a few days. We were supposed to be up there for 8 weeks and then go to Japan. So they told us. Well, our colonel couldn't bear see us sitting around, so he found us a job down by Reams. And my company wound up at Sweeps, which is a battleground of World War I. And anyway, we were pretty close to the little boxcar, railroad car that that Pershing signed the peace treaty after World War I. It's out of Reims, about 20 miles, I would say. And while I was there, we built up the city camps to go home. And I did everything. I did carpenter work, and I poured a lot of concrete. And mostly it was tent camps, but we built up a time or two in a Butler hangar and poured concrete floor in it. And that was our dance floor and also our recreation halls. And while I was there, well, about the only thing that's out of usual, I got called out to clear the right-of-way for a 30,000-volt high line. It was 5 miles of old line and 8 miles of new line. And I wanted to cut down some trees. The lieutenant says, you can't do that in France. And trees weren't worth anything. So I cleared the right away. And then I got called out, and the lieutenant called me in again. He says, well, now you can go cut down those trees you wanted to cut down. And I cut them through my stack, so I had quite an argument with the officer. And there's a little more coming to that. Anyway, we cut the trees down. Then he gave me the job of, maybe it was punishment, I don't know, but he gave me the job of being boss from the American crew that worked with the French crew. So I had a French crew of 6 Frenchmen. None of them spoke English. One of them spoke fluent German. And he was real good as an interpreter. My interpreter was supposed to be one of my truck drivers, and he had a little high school French, and he was worthless. And I'd see the French engineer, who spoke pretty good English, I'd see him about every, maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks. Anyway, the Frenchman told us what to do, and we did most of the work with our crew on most of the line. The 5 miles of old line, we used the old wire, and we just put on big insulators. And on the 8 miles, we used everything. We had poles, we had A-frames, anything we could get. And when it come to putting the wire on, they had a aluminum wire, solid aluminum wire. And you had to be real careful. So even the Frenchmen weren't allowed to carry a pair of pliers up a pole on the new wire. And they wrapped it with a real long aluminum wire wrap to wrap into the insulators. And then they covered that with an aluminum sheet, straps. And they covered it over with that. And I don't know what happened to that line or how long they used it, but anyway, it worked at the time. But it was the big insulators that made a big difference. And after that, I really don't remember. I think that was the last odd job I had, but I did everything in the service besides carpenter.
Can you go back to just before you got to Starnberg Lake? You went through Munich and Camp Dachau.
Dachau. Yeah, while we were at Munich, we visited Dachau, which had been liberated about, I'd say, a week before we were there. We went just for a visit, one day. And I've got pictures of the graves and the carts that the Germans used to haul the bodies out to the grave. When our troops went into Dachau, they found 3,000 bodies waiting to be cremated. but the crematorium was shut down. Either they were short of fuel, of gas, or they knew we were coming, so they shut them down on purpose. I really don't know. But anyway, they say that our troops found 3,000 bodies, and when we visited, they were still only the bodies out. So I've seen the bodies laying around in Dachau. And then I got quite a picture of the grave.
Could you comment on what the local Germans did during the cleanup operation at Dachau?
At Dachau?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know whether the military, or I suppose the military, made the German civilians in Dachau who claimed they didn't know anything about the camp. And you could smell it, you know, way downwind for many miles. But anyway, they said they didn't know anything about the camp, so that what they did for punishment, I guess, they made them haul the bodies out. And they'd have their little carts, little wagons, and maybe one horse, maybe two, and sometimes a horse and a cow, sometimes a couple of cows. No oxen that I saw, but they'd hook them up just like horses. And maybe they pull them by hand themselves. And they haul the five or six or seven bodies on a cart and haul them out and put them in the grave that the Americans had bulldozed out, and then the Americans bulldozed it shut over. And when I saw the grave, I suppose it was 50 feet maybe exposed, and the bodies were laying, I'd say, about five deep and two across, and they were, didn't really smell as bad as you thought it would, because they were all skin and bones. That's all it was.
You had some experience on the Siegfried Line.
No, we just went through, that's all.
Okay. Tell us what that looked like.
A whole bunch of concrete, I don't know, barricades, I guess.
Uh-huh.
That's
okay.
Looked like dragon's teeth, supposed to.
You think it stopped tanks?
Oh, it stopped tanks, yeah. That's what it was for.
Okay.
I don't know if it stopped them or not.
Uh-huh. You set up a display in, I think, Reims, or helped set up a display in Reims. Could you comment on the weaponry that you saw there or worked with?
I was called out to Reims, I think it was in the City Hall, to set up. I was in charge of the swing shift, and I remember being outside. I remember it was a V-2 rocket, a V-1 rocket, a German miniature sub, and I really can't remember what else. And inside, I really don't know what they put in inside. I know we built walls, that's all we did. Mm-hmm. We just built walls. And just what it wound up as, I don't remember, or never knew.
You had experience with V-1s when you were coming across the channel?
Well, we heard the V-1s go over us. They were bombing England, and that's what they were sending over to London. And we went out of Plymouth, I think, and landed on Utah Beach. Mm-hmm. Yeah, going across on an English ship.
How did they sound?
But that's all I can remember.
Very strange sound. And then you also worked with captured German 88s.
Yeah, well, when we first got into Cherbourg, the first sergeant told me I had one day more experience in mines and booby traps than anybody else. So he asked if I'd go on a mine squad. And I picked my partner. And two guys from each company formed a regimental mine squad. And we picked up mines around Cherbourg for about the 6 months that we were there that I was picking up mine. And my friend, just from my company, and I got called out to deactivate a German 88. And it was in a field of four 88s. And we just deactivated one. And we didn't find too much. We found the breech was full of TNT, and the fuse had gone out. It was a time fuse on it that had gone out. And then we found one hand grenade hanging down behind the angle iron of the German 88. But that's, we just deactivated, they were going to send it into ordnance, send it back to the States, and ordnance was going to look at it and see why it worked so good. German 88 was a real good gun. And I don't know much about artillery.
Okay. Could you talk a little bit about living conditions? I mean, you talked about your travel, your movement through Europe. Talk about what it was like to live in a war situation.
Well, we were in tents almost all the time. I'll take that back. In England, we were in tents almost all the time. We were in Romney Huts a little while. In Wales, we were in tents, six-man tents. And in Cherbourg, my company was billeted in an old Catholic schoolhouse, right across from the Catholic Church. And where the rest of the companies were, I don't know, but only thing that I know about it was I was acquainted down on the docks and in the quarry and then on the mine squad. But other companies, right, we run the town of Sherburne. We had the water points, we run the electric station, and we run the town, you might say. Mm-hmm. But there was other companies, so I never had anything to do with that. And then all the way through Germany, we were in tents most of the time. We had a hotel for a few days in Meering, Germany. And then when we got back to France, then we were in tents again. So I done most of my living in tents.
Okay, what about the food?
Yeah, the food was company mess. All the time, regardless. I had very little. I used to go up and see one of the Frenchmen that built the High Line, and we'd always have dinner up there. I think it was on Sundays, we used to go up there. And she served chicken. And once in a while it was rabbit. Hare, I suppose, would be the proper name. But anyway, she was a real good cook. And she was homely as a mud fence, but she was a good cook. Okay. That's about all I can say about other. I don't really remember being in a restaurant. I must have been in Paris, but I don't remember.
Could you comment on mail from your wife when you got married, your family, and how
mail come through pretty good, as I remember. Come a little bit in bunches, of course, but but as I remember, it was pretty good.
Okay.
And I wrote home a lot.
Have you wanted to go back to visit Germany? Or
oh yeah, I would have liked to go on back. I didn't think I could make it. I couldn't afford it either. Last year, you know, they had a ship that went out of Plymouth, I think, out of one of the English ports, and it was supposed to spend 2 days in Cherbourg, and that would be at the docks that we rebuilt. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I couldn't go, but they were going to stay 2 days in Cherbourg and visit the landing grounds from there, the landing points, Omaha Beach and Utah Beach. Mm-hmm. So, but I never went on that trip, and I would have liked to go on.
Talk a little bit about your return to the United States and how you got back with your wife and family.
Oh, some of that, I don't know. I came back, and it happened to be my wife and a girlfriend that she'd known for years and been best friends that stood up for each other when they were married. She stood up for us when we were married, and my wife stood up for them when she got married. But anyway, I never met her husband. But he went over to Europe, too, a little later than I did. But anyway, I don't remember just which outfit he was in. But I had the records one time when I transferred, before we went home. We transferred into two, three different outfits. And the last one we transferred into, well, I knew he was in the same outfit. He'd been transferred into it, too. And so I asked at the orderly desk if anybody knew this guy. Yeah, he's playing cards in a tent right up here. So we came back on the same boat together. And the boat was called the 8th of the 2nd. It was a converted troop ship out of a old passenger, Greek passenger liner. And it took us 11 days to get back out of Mehar. It took us 11 days to get back to New York. But the trip was fine. The ship rode real good. It pitched a little bit, but it didn't bother us any. We were in the middle of the ship, and we were about 500 miles out of New York, and it was quite a breeze, and all of a sudden the engine stopped. And we sat there for a couple hours, and that was the first time the ship rolled that I know of. And it rolled enough so a lot of meskits and stuff come down off of the overhead pipes, you know, who were running around, and dust and newspapers and dirt. But before that, it was real nice. But it wasn't long enough for anybody to get sick or anything like that. So then we got into New York, and I don't remember how long. We landed in New York on Thanksgiving Day of 45. And I don't remember just how long we were there. And then we went to Camp McCoy, Wisconsin. And I rode with another guy that I just met. He offered me a ride into Minneapolis. And he was riding with his sister and brother-in-law. And somehow or another, the other guy, that a friend of mine, didn't go with him. He took the train back to Minneapolis, and we were supposed to meet our wives in a certain hotel. Anyway, the guy that I was riding with and got lost, he was going the wrong way on highway, whatever it is, and he wound up down Iowa before he quit, so he spent part of a night in Iowa in a hotel room, and then we got back to Minneapolis the next day. I didn't get back till the next day. And they were wondering where I was, you know, I was supposed to be. I should have got there the night before.
Your brother was also in the service. Can you talk about that too?
My brother was a carpenter, and he was working at the Everett, Washington, in the shipyard. Mm-hmm. And he had two kids at the time, so he shouldn't have been called at all. But when I went overseas, he all of a sudden just quit his job. And of course, they drafted him right away. And they sent him overseas. I'd been overseas since October of 43, and he come over, I think, in December of 44. And he wound up in Belgium while he was in Paris for a while, and in Belgium, doing much the same as we were. I think they were general engineers, often that he was in. So I got to see him in Paris one day. That's all I saw him overseas. And he got back just after I did, just a day or two after I did. Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about your experience with the Germans, the people, if you can recall any conversations.
Well, the main thing I remember about the Germans was in Cherbourg, the regiment had 5,000 prisoners of war working for us. And we fed them well, and we had enough. We had so few privates and PFCs in our outfit. We were all non-com. We had so few privates and PFCs, and didn't have enough for guards. So all of us non-coms were guards. And like I say, I didn't work as much with them as some of them did because I was on a mine squad. But when I did have time off there, I'd be working down on the docks, and then I'd work with the German prisoners. And we were never afraid because our prisoners were happy to be out of it. Like I say, they were well fed, and they'd had a rough time in the army, and they didn't want to go back to Germany. At least not until the war was over. And so I've been down being a guard on prisoners and also being a foreman of the crew, so I had to show them what to do. And how do you do that from being a guard, being 10 feet away from them? So I've been down underneath the docks with my pistol sticking out in their face and never thought of thinking about it, you know. They were, we raided the prison camp on Christmas Eve, just when the Battle of the Bulge started. We got some sort of a message that they expected saboteurs to land down the beach. So I remember being out on a patrol, and then also we raided the German prison camps, which was just pup tents. They weren't pup tents. And all we found was a couple of radios and a knife or two. We didn't find any firearms of any kind, but they really had built them knives. So that's all. We never did find any saboteurs, at least not that I ever heard of. And the other experience that I had with Germans, more with civilians, when we got to Marion, Germany, before that, we'd have the railroad battalion come up behind us, and they'd have a, up to the bridge that was blown out, but they couldn't, we had a bridge each side of each company, so they couldn't get to the other bridges, and we'd be picking up our own yard engine. In Marion, Germany, we found two steam engines, regular locomotives, and they had an engineer and a fireman and a mechanic, and they were available to us. And every morning that mechanic would have one of the engines fired up, ready to go. And they did all that. We had about 20 miles to one bridge, and the other bridge was practically in town. So we finished the one bridge, and then we had this train do all our riding. And those German, they were older fellows, of course, but I don't think they'd ever been in the Army. They'd just been on the railroad all their lives. But they were real nice to get along with. They'd do anything for us. I think we visited in the home of one of them.
What about the French? Did you have any experiences with the French people?
I worked at the quarry doing demolition with one Frenchman. And he and I got to be pretty good friends, but I guess I was in his home once, but I don't really remember. I think he was married. I don't think he had a family. And then later on, when we got back to France, then I had those six Frenchmen. And I'd take them home. They'd stay in with us during the week. They'd find their own way to work in the morning, on Monday morning, and then they'd stay with us during the week, and we'd haul them back and forth and with the rest of the crew. And then on Friday nights, I'd take them home. And I remember it was 125 miles to take them all, round trip to take them all home. And of course, stop at every place and have a drink, you know. And then one of the Frenchmen invited us up, several of us, not necessarily our crew, but friends of mine. And we'd go up and visit on a Sunday. We'd get up there about noon, and she'd always have dinner for us. And then they'd have a dance in the village in the afternoon. And we'd go to that and then go home. So that's the only Frenchman that I really got acquainted with.
Okay.
Otherwise, I think as a general rule, most PIs like the Germans better than the French. My wife is still here, isn't she?
Yeah. Did you have occasion to meet any of the American generals in Europe?
No.
Did not?
No.
Never seen them coming?
No.
Never had
well, attention. I'll take that back. In England, I got a real sore throat. And I was sleepy. And I went on sick call. The doctor gave me two aspirins, marked me duty, said I didn't have no fever. And I just told him, you mark me whatever you please, but I said, I'm going back to bed. And I went back to bed. And the first sergeant knew me well enough, so he backed me up, and the captain backed me up too. And that's about the only general I ever met. I was lying in bed when they had a general inspection. And I laid in bed during the general inspection. But that's really the only time I remember talking to a, anything over a major, I guess.
You were one of the few soldiers that I've seen that was pretty good at taking pictures. How did you develop them, and how did you get them home?
Really, I don't remember.
You don't?
Okay. No, I don't remember whether we developed them over there or...
Send a film home? Or...
My baby has sent them a film home. I'm not, don't really remember.
Oh, okay.
We must have had them developed in England. But in France, I don't know.
In Germany. What did you notice about the countryside in Germany and France? Anything unusual? Roads?
Well, in France, I don't remember seeing much unusual except the Maginot Line. I was down on that. And you can't see much of that on above the ground. Germany, especially off of Starnberg Lake, that's not so far out of Munich. And that's pretty. Of course, we were there in May, latter part of May, just after the war ended.
So, you were possibly, you were saying, going to Japan after you finished?
That's what they told us.
What were your thoughts about fighting in that theater?
We didn't know, but they didn't say anything about us sending us home for 90 days or anything like that. It's just a rumor that we were scheduled to go to Japan. I don't know if we'd gone right from Germany or if we'd gone back to the States first or what.
Okay, it's just something you worried about.
And I also, one of our lieutenants asked me if I'd re-up. And he said I could go, I'd be joining headquarters company. And I'd go back to Germany in charge of all the floating equipment. So what they were going to do, I don't know. Where they went in Germany, I don't know. Never heard anything more about the Alfred. But I understand they went back to France.
Did you make it to Berchtesgaden when you were in that
no.
part of Germany? Did not. Okay. Did you know a lot of the stories with General Patton and what was going on?
Some. That was when we built the, in support of Patton's Third Army, the railroad bridges. We'd hear a little bit about it, but not much.
Did you do allotment for your wife when you were in the service?
Yeah.
And did you have a lot of worry about her, or was the family taking care of her? Or?
Well, family, she was only 5 miles from home. She was in Fergus Falls. She worked at the state hospital. It was a state hospital in those days. And she was working in the doctor's kitchen. So I didn't worry much about her, but and my folks were out in Everett, Washington. So I never saw my folks all the time. When I came home to Furness. I only had two leaves, 8.5 years. So, but I was going to say, I don't know if that's interesting or not, but we got married on the 7th of the month. So I applied for that 22-28, you know. We paid 22 and the government met at 28 and you sent your wife $50 from the government. Well, we got it for the whole month because we got married on the 7th of the month. But the 21st of the month, I made staff. And at that time, the top three graders, the staff and the techs and the master sergeants, got $1.25 a day. And that's what you got, period. And there was nothing for any kids or anything like that that I can remember. Just $1.25 a day in little quarters. Well, I didn't have no kids, so I'd be money ahead taking that. And I couldn't take the $50 anymore. I had to take that $1.25 a day. So I got $1.25 a day for the 8-9 days of the month, besides already getting the $50. And then when I got overseas, well, we'd been in England, and we'd been in Wales, and we'd been in France, and we'd been in Germany, and we were back to France. And I walked in the orderly room one day, and the clerk says, hey, he says, you got some more money coming. And I says, what happened now? Well, he said somebody was looking up the blue laws, and he found out that in Great Britain, instead of a dollar and a quarter a day, it's $2 a day. He didn't know what to do, so he wrote into the head finance office, and they says, pay the man. Well, he says, they paid him, they got to pay you guys. Mm-hmm. And the only stipulation was we were still had got busted, we were still a top three grader, mm-hmm. and we were still, in the meantime, they changed the rules, so you could take that 22-28. Mm-hmm. And if you had one kid, you got so much for the kid, so you'd make money if you had one kid. Mm-hmm. You'd make money going that way. Well, there was a few of us in the company that were still didn't have any kids, so we still drawn the dollar and a quarter. Mm-hmm. About 8 of us, I think, in the company that got 75 cents a day for every day we'd been in Great Britain. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a bonus.
Bonus. When you got home then, that you didn't stay in the reserves?
No.
At all? And you immediately got working in civilian life?
Yeah. I started working, went to work for Pete Bensmiller in Fargo. Okay. As a carpenter.
Okay.
And I worked for him, I suppose, about a year, maybe less than that, and then it made me a foreman.
Why don't you talk a little bit about what kind of records you have? I notice you've got your discharge papers and your unit history.
Well, I have quite a unit history. I kind of like that book. And I've got a few pictures, and then I've got my discharge papers, and that's about it.
Okay.
And I rescued a cording on the Maginot Line, and I traded it off for another accordion that came out of Germany, and that's the smallest, the sharpest accordion I've ever seen, a little two-row. Mm-hmm. But I brought that home, and I also rescued a pair of binoculars, and I can't remember exactly where I found them. Okay. A pair of 7x50.
Okay. In hindsight, what was probably the most dangerous thing you were involved in?
Oh, mine squad.
Mine squad?
Yeah.
Did you lose anybody?
No. Never lost a man on a mine squad. But I gotta give it, the Germans were very methodical. Mm-hmm. So the mine squads, they figured they'd come back to the Cherbourg area, to the Cherbourg Peninsula. And regimental squad, I would say, picked up 90% of the mines that were picked up around Cherbourg. And that was the second heaviest mine area of World War II. I understand it was a little heavier up around Le Havre. Mm-hmm. I didn't do any mine work up there. Mm-hmm. But like I say, the Germans were very methodical. Sometimes would even have the plan of the minefield. Where they got it from, I don't know, but intelligence got it someplace. And anyway, most of the time, if you found three mines, you could find the rest of them, because they were laid in a pattern. Mm-hmm. And another lucky thing for us, they were planned minefields, and the Germans were figuring on being back themselves, and also they had a little bit of problem with animals and stuff. So on the bouncing Bettys, at least, we never found a single one with a tripwire up. They were always pressure. And very few of the teller mines, the big anti-tank mines, very few of those were booby-trapped. Mm-hmm. And I didn't find any with tripwires, but some of them were booby-trapped. Mm-hmm. And I missed one of the big experience that I think I should tell here. My company was sent up to Brick, Quebec, which is about, you know, on the side of the peninsula from Sherman. But the colonel come up one night and told us about the rest of the mine squad experience they had. They were in a minefield fairly close into Sherman. They were close enough so they were going to go back to camp for the noon meal. And they were far enough from any buildings, so they were pulling mines. You know, we used to hook a rope on and pull them. If they blew up, they blew up. If they didn't, why, we'd pick them up. And anyway, come noon, and the trucks were all down. And, you know, in France, the roads are way down where they washed out, and then the hedgerow is way up pretty high, and then the field is kind of halfway in between. Well, this 11, 12 men that were left on the mine squad, two of us were gone, but they were all in the field, and the last trucks come to go home for noon, take them home for noon lunch, and the last man out of the minefield had a rope hooked on to a mine. You know, when he went over the hedgerow, I just grabbed the rope and pulled it with him, and the whole field blew up. The whole field blew up. And they figured that was the only mistake the Germans ever made. They booby trapped a pile. They used to send 3-4 in a stack, you know, and figured we'd take the top one off and miss the last one. But they never booby trapped one of those piles. You know, it was a single mine that they booby trapped. So the whole field blew up anyway from that concussion from the one mine. And there wasn't a man in the field. And 5 minutes before, there was 12 guys out there. So just plain luck.
Yes, yes. Okay. You went in with several friends from your hometown?
No, not really.
Not really?
No, I knew a few of them slightly from Fergus Falls.
Oh, okay.
But as far as I know, Talbot Odegaard and I were the only ones from Battle Lake in that bunch.
You entered the service from Fort Snelling?
Yeah.
And then come back through Camp McCoy?
Camp McCoy, yeah.
Okay. And, okay, are you a member of the VFW?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a life member.
Active with them?
No. I don't follow the VFW very much.
Not much.
Okay. I'm active in the Sons of Norway, and that's about it.
Okay, that keeps you busy.
That and church.
Okay, well, that's good. Okay, any other comments you want to make?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, let's terminate.